compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Good morning. Sunday morning. I mean, Tuesday morning. What morning is it, Cyrus?
It's Taco Tuesday.
That's true. Good morning. Patrick Madrid here. Cyrus is with me, as you might imagine. The number to dial, 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. We've talked a lot about tensions, racial tensions in this country, and here's a voice of reason, if you ask me, none other than Charles Barkley, NBA star. And he was talking on Saturday prior to the final four games starting, and he had the following to say about his take on race relations and what he thinks about that.
Shared that news and how painful it was.
Yeah, but the one thing I took out of that piece was, man, I think most white people and black people are great people. I really believe that in my heart. But I think our system is set up where our politicians, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, are designed to make us not like each other so they can keep their grasp of money and power. They divide and conquer. I truly believe in my heart most white people and black people are awesome people, but we're so stupid following our politicians, whether they're Republicans or Democrats. And their only job is, hey, let's make these people not like each other. We don't live in their neighborhoods. We all got money. Let's make the whites and blacks not like each other. Let's make rich people and poor people not like each other. Let's scramble the middle class. I truly believe that in my heart.
Cyrus, do you think he's a white supremacist?
No, I do not.
Okay. He wouldn't qualify in any case, right? He's an African-American, very successful businessman, NBA star. He has done a lot of good. I mean, he's entertained a lot of people, that's for sure. But I thought this very simple, quick take on this issue was accurate. And, you know, I don't know if every last person in these media strongholds or every last person in some of these professional sports strongholds, I don't know if they all feel this way, but I think some of them seem to. This idea of trying to maintain a kind of friction, a kind of tension between people of various racial groups.
Yeah.
It seems, I think he's right. I think he's pointing to something that's real, but very few people want to say it, right?
Absolutely. I think he's even putting himself in a place of danger. I mean, he could lose his livelihood saying something so profoundly true on mm-hmm. that kind of a platform. When I grew up, can I share a little story?
Yeah, please.
And hopefully
please
this isn't filler time. When I grew up, I was poor, and my mom was very racist, and we lived in a predominantly Mexican neighborhood. And I was brought up to believe that Mexicans are lazy. And so I'm a little kid, and that's what I thought. And then I joined the workforce. I'm 14 years old, and I went and started working when I was 14. And I'm working with white people and Mexican people, and the Mexican people are working harder than anyone I've ever seen work before.
What kind of work? This is interesting.
By the way,
just full disclosure, I'm 100% Mexican on my dad's side of the family.
Right.
I'm listening with avid attention.
I know, and I'm terrified to even share these kind of stories, but it was in the restaurant industry. And mm-hmm. But I'm also seeing, busboys and cooks in the back of the house, and then the front of the house would be all the white people. Mm-hmm. And then so I'd start to see a segregation there in the way that certain people were treated. But again, I'm seeing, I was told that, like, the stereotype was that they're lazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen anyone work harder in my whole life. And so these stereotypes started breaking down. And I realized that I had been fed a falsehood about other people. And I started noticing, it's like, wait, we live in the same neighborhood. Why aren't we friends? Like, we should.
Why aren't we hanging out?
Why aren't we hanging out? We're people. We're just people. And it really helped. It helped
people
me
are people.
Break down, a racism that had been fed to me. When you're born, no one is born a racist.
Right. You're a clean slate.
You're a clean slate.
Other people write on it.
Right. And you're going to become whatever you're fed. And hopefully you can come out of that. And I just got really lucky by being able to see that these were just stereotypes and wrong. They weren't even real.
So you were able to, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but you were able to, I'm presuming, at a certain point you just said, that ideology is stupid and I can see that it's false.
Absolutely.
Did you ever have a chance to like revisit the topic with your mom in later years? I mean, did you ever bring it up?
No. Oh boy, I hope she's not listening. No, and there's, I'm going to get canceled, man.
No, you won't.
Racist,
I've renewed your contract
racist,
for another year. So
racist people will never, it's very rare that I've heard a racist person admit that they're racist. They'll actually say something racist and then they'll say, oh, but I'm not racist.
Mm-hmm. It's such a, thank you for sharing that, because we all grow up with the environment that we're in and the opinions of people who surround us, the adults who surround us by the time we're old enough to be adults ourselves. In some cases, it's so deeply ingrained that it's difficult for some people, if ever, to shake it. But what a great thing that for you, even though that was what was piped into your mind when you were little, the older you got, the more you saw that this ideology is just simply false.
And that's why seeing someone like Charles Barkley say this is just jaw-dropping and awesome, and I applaud him for it.
Yeah, me too.
Because we need to come together. We're constantly being told how different we are and how there's always an other. It's always them. It's always them versus us, and it's not. It's we are on this planet together.
That is true. So let me ask you this. In light of that, Cyrus, I'm not interviewing you. We're just two guys having a conversation. By the way, speaking of conversations, anyone can join. Call me at 888-914-9149. That's the number to be on the air. I'd love to talk to you. And we have plenty of topics to discuss today, including whatever's on your mind. 888-914-9149. I'm sure you saw the Major League Baseball statement that came out 3-4 days ago. April 2nd, I was 4 or 5 days ago, April 2nd. Let me read it to you, Cyrus. I don't know if you heard it. This is the Major League Baseball moving the All-Star Game and the draft out of Atlanta because of the new law that was passed in the state of Georgia regarding elections. Here's the statement. This is from this is a news release from Major League Baseball, the Office of the Commissioner. Commissioner of Baseball Robert D. Manfred Jr. issued the following statement today regarding the 2021 All-Star Game. Quote, over the last week, we have engaged in thoughtful conversations with clubs, former and current players, the Players Association, and the Players Alliance, among others, to listen to their views. I have decided that the best way to demonstrate our values as a sport is by relocating this year's All-Star Game and MLB Draft. Major League Baseball fundamentally supports voting rights for all Americans and opposes restrictions to the ballot box. In 2020, Major League Baseball became the first professional sports league to join the nonpartisan Civic Alliance to help build a future in which everyone participates in shaping the United States. We proudly used our platform to encourage baseball fans and communities throughout the country to perform their civic duty and actively participate in the voting process. Fair access to voting continues to have our game's unwavering support. We will continue with our plans to celebrate the memory of Hank Aaron during the season's All-Star festivities. In addition, MLB's planned investments to support local communities in Atlanta as part of our All-Star Legacy Project will move forward. We are finalizing a new host city, and details about these events will be announced shortly. So that was their decision to to move, you know, this very important part of the Major League Baseball season to a different state, and they're doing it to punish the state of Georgia for this voting law. Now, I'm going to get to the voting law in a few minutes. The Atlanta Braves, for their part, they released a statement saying the Atlanta Braves are deeply disappointed by the decision of Major League Baseball to move its 2021 All-Star Game. This was neither our decision nor our recommendation, and we are saddened that fans will not be able to see this event in our city. The Braves organization will continue to stress the importance of equal voting opportunities and we had hoped our city could use this event as a platform to enhance the discussion. Our city has always been known as a uniter in divided times, and we will miss the opportunity to address issues that are important to our community. Unfortunately, businesses, employees, and fans in Georgia are the victims of this decision. We will continue to support the community legacy projects which have been planned and are in process. So that's one reaction from the world of Major League Baseball. Now, there have been some other reactions. So, for example, Senator Marco Rubio, for his part, he has been active on Twitter, and he had a very interesting response to this, but he responded directly to the MLB commissioner, Commissioner Manfred, and he wrote a letter yesterday to the commissioner of the Major League Baseball League, and here's his letter. So can you imagine, Cyrus, you get a letter from a U.S. senator who's like asking you questions. You're not subpoenaed. You don't have to necessarily appear before a Senate inquiry committee. But if you got an official envelope in the mail from the U.S. Senate office of one particular senator, it'd probably make your ears perk up, wouldn't it?
I don't think I'd like that.
Well, I don't think that the commissioner of Major League Baseball liked this letter. But this is what Senator Marco Rubio, Republican, sent to him. Dear Commissioner Manfred, I write to ask you whether you intend to maintain your membership at Augusta National Golf Club. As you are well aware, the exclusive members-only club is located in the state of Georgia. Last week, you, quote, decided that the best way to demonstrate our values as a sport is by relocating this year's All-Star Game from Atlanta because of Georgia's revised election law. It is a decision that will have a bigger impact on countless small and minority-owned businesses in and around Atlanta than the new election law ever will, and one that reeks of hypocrisy. Will Major League Baseball now end its engagement with nations that do not hold elections at all, like China and Cuba? Will you end your lucrative financial relationship with Tencent, a company with deep ties to the Communist Party and actively helps the Chinese government hunt down and silence political dissidents? Since Major League Baseball now appears eager to use its platform, quote-unquote, to demonstrate, quote-unquote, unwavering support for fundamental human rights, will you cease your relationship with the Chinese government, which at this very moment is committing genocide against the Uyghur Muslims in the autonomous region in China? I am, of course, this is Senator Marco Rubio speaking in his letter, I am, of course, under no expectation that any of this will happen. Taking the All-Star Game out of Georgia is an easy way to signal virtues without significant financial fallout. But speaking out against the Chinese Communist Party would involve a significant loss of revenue and being closed out of a lucrative market. In the end, as a citizen of a free nation, you and Major League Baseball have the right to speak out against laws in the U.S. that you disagree with, even if it is on the basis of false information. What would be truly bold, however, is if you would speak out on behalf of the voiceless who face arbitrary imprisonment, forced sterilization, coerced abortions, rape, and other horrific acts at the hands of one of your business partners. I'm under no illusion that Major League Baseball will sacrifice business revenue on behalf of its alleged corporate values. Similarly, I am under no illusion that you intend to resign as a member of Augusta National Golf Club. To do so would require a personal sacrifice, as opposed to the woke corporate virtue signaling of moving the All-Star Game from Atlanta. Sincerely, Marco Rubio, U.S. Senator. Oh, that is so good and so on target. And it remains to be seen. I wonder if maybe the commissioner will decide that he doesn't want to really pursue this publicly because maybe he doesn't want to sacrifice his members-only status at the Augusta Golf Club, which happens to be in Georgia. I mean, I would think that that would be the logical next step, that if you're going to punish the people of Georgia for a voting law, which, by the way, I looked up some stats on this, and over 70% of the black voters in the state supported this election law. Did you know that? That's not being talked about on CNN. In fact, there's a lot that's being said on some of these news outlets that is a complete distortion of the circumstances surrounding this voting law. And I personally don't care one way or the other about that voting law. But it goes back, it harkens back to Hollywood, production studios, Netflix, and others who wanted to punish Georgia. Last year it was, and the year before that, it seems, because they passed the heartbeat bill, which said that once an unborn child's heartbeat can be discerned, can be heard, can be detected, then it's illegal to abort that baby. And that was just something up with which Hollywood would not put. And so they acted, as they often do, trying to virtue signal. And they said, fine, we're not going to shoot movies there anymore. We're not going to do our sitcoms there anymore. We're not going to use Georgia as a place. And of course, that punishes Georgia because there are, you know, little revenues, huge revenues, rather, that they won't receive from that. So this is an example of them doing that.
That's exactly what it is. Did you see Ricky Gervais's, was it Golden Globe speech from a year or two ago?
I did.
And that reminds me of that, where he's like, you all, if ISIS had a new movie studio, you'd all be calling your agents right now looking for
trying
a deal.
To get in. Mm-hmm. He's so right about that.
Yeah, that's great.
And you know what's good about that? Sorry, I'm glad you brought that up. Ricky Gervais is a committed atheist. He doesn't have a religious bone in his body, as far as I can tell. He's actually very anti-theistic. So he's not coming at this from a partisan political or religious or conservative Christian whatever background. He's just telling it like it is. And did you see the scenes in the audience while he was saying that?
Yeah, my favorite was Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks, yeah.
Yeah.
He's like,
ooh.
Yeah. And you know, you notice that there was no backlash. What are they going to get him on?
Yeah, I like.
What are they going to get him on? He's an atheist.
He started the speech saying, "This is the last time I'm doing this. I will not be invited back."
He's the best thing that ever happened to that award show.
Absolutely.
First of all, he's genuinely funny. I'm not here to get, you know, into rabbit trails, but I think it's good that you brought that up, Cyrus. He's the best thing that ever happened because rather than the same old, and I don't watch those shows anymore. It's been ages since I've watched one. But rather than the same old everybody high-fiving each other and how great we all are and isn't it awesome that we're all here and giving each other awards.
Hey, we're making the world a better place with our action
movies.
Get a
picture of Tom Hanks' facial reaction to Ricky Gervais, please. And if you can, just post that
all right.
On Twitter and just say this sort of, you know, one picture is worth 1,000 words. So when we come back from this break, I want to share with you a little bit kind of the background of what's provoking this silliness, this virtue signaling. It's the same kind of thing as our so-called superiors, governors and others in high society who hector you and they scorn you because you're not wearing a mask all the time and you're not masked up and where's your mask? And then they get caught not wearing masks themselves. Something similar to that. I'll be right back with more right after this. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Gotta keep them separated.
This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back. This is the Patrick Madrid Show, and I'm really appreciate you listening to the program. Please tell your friends about it. Easiest way to share it is through the Relevant Radio app. Completely free. It's on your app store. We're talking a bit about the controversy, the dust-up over Major League Baseball pulling the, some important parts of its season from Georgia because of this new voting law that passed. With the support, as doing some due diligence here, looking at, you know, what voter support said on this issue, it seems that over 70% of black voters in the state of Georgia actually supported this law. But it's being portrayed as, what did Joe Biden say yesterday? El presidente. And some people say, why do you say el presidente? I don't know, because it's in Spanish and it means the president. So it's just a little something different. And some will say, how come you never said it about Donald Trump? I did. I would call him El Presidente from time to time as well. So, you know.
Well, how come you never said about Obama?
That's what I think when I started. I started calling
him. I'm just playing.
If I had been on this microphone during the George W. Bush administration, I would have called him El Presidente. I just like the way it sounds. I think El Presidente just sounds cooler than the president. Don't you?
When you say it.
Yeah, El Presidente. I have people come up to me at speaking events, Cyrus. No joke, seriously. And they'll come up to me and they'll just say El Presidente and start laughing. Like, and they're not laughing at the person. They're laughing, you know.
It's a joke between you and that person.
They're laughing
That's
with
nice.
Me.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
That's right. Okay. So anyway, so what did El Presidente Biden say? He said it was Jim Crow on steroids. And when people hear Jim Crow, I think they, you know, they should at least, they should recognize, okay, that's bad because that is a holdover from slavery, which at least ostensibly officially ended with the end of the Civil War in 1865. But in many respects, whites in the South, they worked hard, not all of them, many of them. Historically, we can verify this. Many of them worked really hard to do everything they could to still put as many restrictions on African Americans as they possibly could. So Jim Crow, heinous. I remember when I was, how old would I have been? Maybe 7 or 8 years old. And I took a driving trip with a great aunt and great uncle who were heading down to the Carolinas for some reason. And they took me along. And I remember one particular place. It was a sort of like a diner or a cafe or something. I have a hazy memory of it. And there was a whites only sign above, I think, as I recall, it might have been the bathroom or it might have been, I think it was a bathroom. And I remember asking my great uncle, what does that mean? Because it never occurred to me. Like, he said, oh, well, you know, back, you know, I'm surprised that's still there, he said. You know, most of those should be gone by now. But for a long time in the South, white people tried to keep black people from using their same restrooms or the same drinking fountains or the same restaurants and things like that. So I probably caught like the very, very tail end of it, one of the very few vestiges that might have been left by 1968. And I happened to see it with my own eyes. And I remember being baffled by it. So Jim Crow is, you know, he was a minstrel figure, a blackface vaudeville kind of figure. But the term Jim Crow became associated with all of these different ways in which white people would try to put clamps on black people to make them not able to be full members of society, et cetera, et cetera. So there's no question that this existed. It's terrible. And, you know, there's no, in no way should we ever try to minimize it, nor should we try to explain it away or pretend it didn't exist. None of the above. I think it should be completely repudiated in the strongest terms possible. So in the Washington Times, there's an overview here of why it's a problem for people, especially those on the left, it seems it's, you know, entirely those on the left, who are depicting this new law in Georgia as Jim Crow, or as El Presidente said, Jim Crow on steroids. So here's the article. This is from the Washington Times, written by Valerie Richardson. Linking Georgia's newly signed election law to the segregationist Jim Crow system is not only inaccurate, it's an affront to black Americans. As far as Michael Lancaster is concerned, his forebears were among those who labored under the racist system designed to prevent black suffrage and enforce segregation in public facilities. And just for the sake, because the word suffrage is not used much anymore, suffrage refers to voting. It has nothing to do with suffering. It has nothing to do with being, you know, in any way disadvantaged outside of voting. So his forebears were those who labored under that system. They enforced segregation in public facilities, transportation, and education in the Deep South in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Mr. Lancaster, Georgia State Director of the Frederick Douglass Foundation, said, "A civil debate about voting rights is an important conversation to have, but comparing Georgia's election reform legislation to Jim Crow is insulting to my black ancestors who suffered through these dehumanizing segregation laws." As Democrats increasingly brandish the Jim Crow comparison in the fight over state and national election laws, critics, including black conservatives, are challenging the narrative, saying it trivializes the era's horrific abuses by likening them to standard identification requirements used for everything from boarding an airplane to buying beer. Lancaster says, comparing absentee ballot changes and ID requirements to banning black people from restaurants and drinking fountains is absurd. Wilfred Riley, associate political science professor at Kentucky State University, a historically black college, said, the Jim Crow claim passes through nonsensical into offensiveness. The Georgia Election Integrity Act expands voting hours, but also requires identification for absentee voting. It prohibits handing out food and drinks for voters within 150 feet of polling entrances and bans the mobile voting buses used during last year's pandemic. Riley says, I've read the Georgia bill and it is a fairly standard voting law, which attempts to respond to concerns, justified or not, on the right about election integrity, while also taking practical steps to avoid voting, to add voting machines and reduce wait times. Whether you approve or disapprove of the law, comparing this sort of thing to lynching or mandated racial segregation, which is what Jim Crow was, is beyond bizarre. Now, here's a really interesting detail of this whole story. The food and drink stipulation. Now, Cyrus, we have the law here. We have it in front of us. This runs to, in the PDF format, it runs to what, like 90 pages, something
98
like that? 98 pages. Too long to read it on the air. But if you drill down to the section on food and drink, it says that you're not allowed to bring food or drink to people who are waiting in line to vote within 150 feet. Now, at first glance, people are thinking, oh, that's heartless. That's cruel. How can you do that? What about those poor people standing in the sun? Well, it just so happens that the great state of New York, under the leadership of the King of Corpse Mountain, Governor Cuomo, I say that because of his COVID disastrous record, they have it. They have that same provision in their voting law. The food and drink stipulation is not unique, the Washington Times points out. Other states, including New York, have such limits. Quote, and this is, you know, quoting those who have a comment on this, preventing electioneering, such as community or church leaders handing out chilled bottles of Donald Trump iced tea. So I wonder how maybe Democrat voters would react if in the polling area, the precinct, and people are waiting in line, and the rah-rah, sis, boom-bah, you know, pickup truck with Donald Trump flag showed up and started handing out Donald Trump iced teas to everybody. I wonder if they would be okay with that. Or if they would say, no, you're interfering. That's electioneering. You're trying to sway people's votes. That's what this has to do with. And, as I say, New York State has the same provision in its election law. The same one that is being called Jim Crow, because it's being done almost identically in Georgia. Continuing, the Jim Crow schemes to disenfranchise voters include requiring them to pay the equivalent of $25 to $50 to prove that they could read at a time when illiteracy was far more widespread and prove that they own property. This according to America's Black Holocaust Museum in Milwaukee. The effect was to exclude poor black and white voters. In addition, blacks could be excluded via grandfather clauses, which allowed them to cast ballots if their relatives voted before 1867, eliminating nearly all black residents, because there were virtually no black people who were able to vote before 1867. Remember the Civil War and all that? When all else failed, political science professor Russell Brooker, who teaches at Alverno College, he says, when all else failed, blacks who tried to vote were threatened, beaten, and killed. The passage of the 1965 Voting Rights Act signaled the end of the Jim Crow era, but the term has resurfaced as Democrats seek to beat back attempts by GOP-led state legislatures to tighten the process amid voter fraud allegations following the widespread expansion of mail-in voting and absentee balloting during the novel coronavirus pandemic. Stacey Abrams, who ran for the office of governor and did not win, she launched the Stop Jim Crow 2 campaign this year to push for congressional legislation that would safeguard the freedom to vote, as well as to stop red states from rolling back emergency rules and enacting new limits. Now more than ever, she said, Americans must demand federal action to protect voting rights as we continue to fight against these blatantly unconstitutional efforts that are nothing less than Jim Crow 2.0. That's obviously her perspective. I don't share that perspective. Let's see. Going back to conservative talk show host Larry Elder, he's quoting President Biden, who made the comparison with Jim Crow. He says, I don't even know what Biden meant. He says, I suppose that was an attempt at being clever. Jim Crow is dead. Does Biden even know what he meant? Because President Biden declared on March 25th, he says that this Republican bill, which at the time had not passed, was sick and that this makes Jim Crow look like Jim Eagle. And Larry Elder, who's a black commentator, he scratched his head. He doesn't quite know what that's supposed to mean. He also cited a March 17th Rasmussen Reports poll showing that 75% of voters supported voter identification requirements, including about 70% of black voters, a higher level of support than Democrats, who were 60% in favor. And this is in the state of Georgia. Mr. Elder said, and if voter suppression laws are designed to suppress the black vote, what happened in 2008 and 2012? For the first time in history, the percentage of eligible black voters who voted in 2008 and 2012 exceeded the percentage of eligible white voters who voted in 2008 and 2012. Senator Tim Scott, South Carolina Republican, he argued that the Georgia law says we are going to expand your access to the polls by legalizing drop boxes, which were banned before the pandemic, while extending hours and adding Sunday voting. He says, how can you distort the facts so terribly that you're willing to bring back the concept of a poll tax or the concept of Jim Crow, said Senator Scott in his speech that he gave to, this is posted by Forbes magazine. He says, you can only do that when you have nothing to stand on. Now, Mr. Booker, going back to him, he says, it's not as bad as Jim Crow because Jim Crow is ultimately backed up by murder and burning down your house. Nobody's doing that. It's not as bad as Jim Crow. He cited long lines outside polling places in minority neighborhoods and voter roll purges. This is one of the claims that's going on here. Even though Georgia provides free state identification cards, he noted that would-be voters must still be able to produce documents such as birth certificates, which can entail expenses. He says, the point is they're trying to keep people from voting who think they will vote against them. During Jim Crow, it was Democrats keeping Republicans from voting. And now, he says, I don't agree with him, it's Republicans keeping Democrats from voting. I don't think anybody's keeping anyone from voting. But rather, the idea is, to put it in a nutshell, that if you want to get on an airplane, you have to show ID. You can't get on a commercial airliner if you don't have ID. They'll send you home. I'm sorry, you can't go. But I forgot it at home and I got to get, I'm sorry. You can't go. There's no way around that. If you want to get on an airplane, you have to have ID. If you want to do just about anything, if you want to go to your doctor and have an appointment, unless they know you really well, you're going to have to show ID at the counter when you check in. If you want to buy cigarettes, you have to show ID. Heck, you want to buy beer, you got to show ID. Just about anything you want to do in this country requires some sort of showing identification. And the heart of this 98-page bill, which is now the law in Georgia, essentially says we want to make the voting as free and as accessible as possible. Now, I know that the narrative on the other side is shouting and hooping and hollering and saying that that's not true. Just read the bill. I mean, I haven't had a chance to read all of it myself. It's quite voluminous. But the sections that I've looked at closely, thus far at least, they don't seem to indicate anything like that. And it just, I find it mildly amusing that one point that's getting so much attention, and that's the one about you're not allowed to bring food or drink to somebody who's waiting in line, the same provision is in place in New York's voting law. And nobody seems to be calling New York State white supremacist or anything like that. So there's some background to the whole thing. And I don't know if you're interested in reading 98 pages of it, but Cyrus, are you going to post the link to that, or how do you want to handle the law itself?
If there's a demand for people to have the 98 pages, I'm happy to post the link. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and maybe we'll get a little deeper into this. We'll see. But we have people waiting. I want to get into the phone calls as well. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Janine, listening in Augusta, Georgia. Hi, Janine.
Hello. I'm so glad that you're talking about this. It has been so unfairly covered in the media, and I'm so disappointed that they pulled out the All-Star game from Atlanta.
Yeah.
I mean, think and, you of know, all this the, week is the mass.
Think of all the minority-owned businesses in and around Atlanta that will go penniless now. They're being punished financially because of this ridiculous decision.
Right. And I don't think, you know, the Masters is now. It's this week. Mm-hmm. It's ongoing at the Augusta National Golf Club. And, I mean, I really don't think Mr. Coca-Cola is going to give up his membership. I mean, I would
Mr. Coca-Cola or the guy from the yeah. Major League Baseball, the commissioner?
No, yeah, the commissioner, Mr. Or Manfred. Mr. Coca-Cola, too, for that matter, because Coca-Cola has said that you know, they agree with all of this pulling out the All-Star game and disagree with the law. And as you pointed out, you've thoroughly gone over points in the law. I mean, for example, the whole thing about the food and the beverage, there have been signs ever since I can remember at the polling places that political parties are not allowed within so many feet of the voters. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's always been that way.
Well, there's, you know, the problem of electioneering, and this is where if you get people who are trying to sway an election, they could start, you know, like showing up and the people who are waiting in line to vote, they could be handing them free stuff. Hey, you know, here's a beer. You look hot.
Oh,
here's
yeah.
a beer. Vote for our candidate, you know, and hey, if you vote for our
right.
candidate, when you come out, we'll give you another beer. Stuff like that. I mean, that's clearly
right.
tampering
and
with an election. Clearly.
I agree with you. And it's just sad that I think somebody like Stacey Abrams could better use her energy to help people who need to get IDs where they're free places. There's places where you can go to get an ID because I volunteer at Catholic Social Services, and sometimes we have to help people get IDs. We don't do it,
right.
but there's a place where you can go.
Now, my understanding, Janine, is that there's no expense to the voter, right? So if an ID is necessary, he doesn't have to shell out money. It's actually made free. It's made available for free by the state. Do I have that correct?
As far as I know, that is correct. I mean, you can't just go anywhere and get one, but there are places to. Yes. Well, for voting, I don't know that much about that particular point yet, but I'm sure if they've said that in the law that they will uphold that, you know, to help mm-hmm. people get an ID.
Right.
It's certainly not Jim Crow. I mean, I've been a Southerner all my life. I'm 65 years old. I remember the Jim Crow laws as our illustrious president brought up. And, I mean, that was a cruel and different time. It's not like that now. So,
I'm happy to hear
that. I think that's silly.
Well, Janine, thank you. Now, it remains to be seen how this will all play out, but thank you for raising your voice on the issue. Everyone is welcome here on the Patrick Madrid Show. Regardless of your perspective, my number is 888-914-9149. I'll be right back. Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
Time to take it up
there. Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Okay, we're back, and I will be going to your phone calls here shortly. Thank you for your patience holding. I just have one more part to get through to kind of complete the puzzle. This is a discussion this morning about the new law in Georgia, basically saying if you want to vote, you need to present an ID. And all this hooping and hollering and tub thumping and throwing dust up in the air, saying that this is a law that is trying to restrict voting or suppress vote. It's simply not true. And the law itself is available. All 98 pages of it. Cyrus is either posting or has posted a link to that directly to the Georgia state government website. So if you want to read it for yourself, I mean, don't take my word for it, but if you want to read it for yourself, you'll see what I'm talking about. So here's a synopsis of what's going on with the Georgia voting law. And this law, by the way, is what prompted Commissioner Manfred of Major League Baseball to yank the, you know, some of the Major League Baseball events, including the draft, which were scheduled to be played and to take place in Atlanta, in Georgia. And it's his attempt to kind of try to punish the state of Georgia for taking this common sense approach, some of the provisions of which are the same in other states like New York. You know, the part about how you're not allowed to bring food or beverages to people waiting in line within 150 feet of a polling place. Some people are running with that and saying, oh, look, you know, you're standing in the hot sun and no one's allowed to bring you any water. I've been voting all of my adult life and I've stood in the sun and I've stood in line in polling places, sometimes for a long time. I don't remember ever seeing anybody bringing anybody beverages. Cyrus, were you ever brought an ice cold beverage or maybe a hot cup of cocoa while you were waiting in line to vote?
People just ignore me and that hurts worse.
I don't ignore you. That's why I invite you on the air as often as I do, because I know you don't like it.
No one has ever done that.
No one has ever done that to me. I've never even seen it.
No, I haven't seen it either.
I've never even seen it. So this is one of the talking points on the left. The left wing is saying this is, oh, look, they're just denying. I mean, Jesus said, if you give me a cup of cold water, you give someone a cup of cold water in my name, you will not go without your reward. And they're trying to turn this into like, you know, it's so anti-Christian that you're not allowed. New York State has the same provision in its law. You're not allowed to bring people. And the reason for it is, as I said, electioneering. Because what if the Donald Trump mobile showed up and started handing out free hot dogs and beer? And, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Hey, there's more where this came from if you'll vote for our candidate. Do you think that would be okay? I don't think anybody on the left would say that's okay. And I don't think anyone on the right should say it's okay either. This is what that's trying to guard against. Not to mention the fact that if you want to get on an airplane or you want to register for school or you want to do just about anything that's official in this country, including going into a liquor store and buying alcohol, you have to show ID. So, I mean, are we trying to suppress people from buying alcohol if they don't have an ID? Well, I guess, you don't want people who shouldn't be buying alcohol. Having an ID is a way to put a fence around that, just to make sure that you're not serving alcohol to a kid. We require IDs to get on a commercial airliner. I think that's great. And we have that so that the people who shouldn't be getting on a commercial airliner won't. You know, some guy with a box cutter, let's say. And in the same way, I mean, if we care about elections, and I do, and I think most Americans do, if I had to guess, I think we care about them. We want them to be honest and not rigged, regardless of the outcome. I mean, if the majority of people elect somebody that I didn't vote for, so be it. That's how it is. And I'm completely content to live with that. That's how it should be, if you ask me. All I'm asking for is that it be honest. And one way to help ensure honesty is to say, let's see your ID. Let's see that you are legally eligible to vote. And if you're not legally eligible to vote, then you're not going to vote, because that would be rigged. That would be illegal. I think it's so simple. It's hard for me to understand why people are trying to turn this into something it's really not. Okay, so here's an analysis. This is from the Washington Examiner. To hear some people in the media tell it, Georgia has just undone the civil rights era. The state's new election reform law, signed by Governor Brian Kemp, they say, is an attempt to disenfranchise millions and return to the Jim Crow era. This narrative is both false and ridiculous. The story, in brief, is this. Democrats find it politically advantageous to cry that minority voters are being disenfranchised. And so they are taking this opportunity to criticize this new law. Georgia's new voting reform law contains simple measures, most of which, and this might shock you if your understanding of the law comes from CNN, these are simple measures that will make it easier for people to vote. Some of its provisions rightly protect the voting process from the very real risk of fraud, a risk that grows as more votes are cast by mail. Some people find this disagreeable. And in the article, it goes through some interesting timelines here. So one example is this. Back in 2018, the Democrat Party was arguing against and using the same argument about disenfranchisement in the 2018 Georgia governor's race. The media, they were all over this. And they had the same narrative saying that in this race, Stacey Abrams had that race stolen from her. Why? Because people who shouldn't have been voting were voting, or that people who voted once voted more than once. So in other words, back in 2018, the polls were flipped, and rather than it being Democrats, rather than it being Republicans saying this, it was Democrats who were saying this. And they said that the election was stolen because of voter fraud. The media has characterized this new Georgia law in general in ways that are deliberately false, it seems. And in this article, there are a series of examples of, you know, what those falsehoods are. So it's been claimed that this new law forces polling places to close at 5 p.m. so that working people, and this is what President Biden said, so that working people can't cast their vote after their shift is over. But in fact, the law merely requires polling places during early voting to stay open until at least 5 p.m. And it says, the law says that the polling places can stay open till 7 p.m., but they have to stay open till at least 5 p.m. So it's in actual fact, it's an expansion of voting hours. It's not a contraction of voting hours. And you can read the law for yourself, all 98 pages of it. Cyrus has got a link to it, to the Georgia government website. Another provision that has also aroused anger in the media is one barring political campaigners from bribing voters with money, food, water, etc., within 150 feet of a polling place. This provision, as I mentioned earlier, is already a law in many states, including New York. But suddenly now, people on the left are outraged by it. Why were they not outraged by the same provision that's in the election law in the state of New York and many other states for that matter? The law also contains provisions that will make these long dehydrating lines less likely. It empowers state officials to intervene and make voting easier where bad local decisions, mostly by election boards, have resulted in fewer polling stations, longer lines, and otherwise poor administration. So the new law provides that there will be more polling stations in a way to reduce the lines and to expand the amount of time, including making voting available on Sunday so that as many people as possible will be able to vote. Finally, the article points out, the law contains common sense requirements that absentee voters provide appropriate proof of identity when requesting their ballots and request their ballot within a perfectly reasonable 9-week window, not the 6-month period that was permitted during the 2020 election. And so it goes. I mean, there's more to it. There's much more to it, but it's really more of the same. In other words, it's not something new or different. It's actually very different, if you put it this way, from the way the media is portraying it. And there it is. 888-914-9149. Why don't we round out the hour with some phone calls? We'll start with Maria in Temple, Texas. Hi, Maria.
Hi, Patrick. How are you?
I am well, thank you. Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you for receiving my call, and thank you for hopefully answering my question. I have to say, I've been listening to your show for quite a few years, and thanks to you and Relevant Radio, I have grown deeper into my faith. So you guys are kind of like the people I go to when I have questions or, you know, I need to gather information about the faith.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah. I really appreciate it. Like the show is amazing, and I listen to different shows throughout the day, and it's extremely helpful for people like me.
That's great.
I wanted to understand a little bit where I come from. So I was a Christian.
By the way, Marie, we have about a minute. I don't want you to get cut short.
Okay.
Do you want to get straight to your question?
Okay. Yes. So I want to know if the Catholic Church at any point in time had any kind of law that made it kind of illegal for minors to get married with adults, meaning like, you know, a 14-year-old girl with a 19 or 20-year-old boy, things like that, or it was always as long as the parents gave permission.
Yeah, there were two. Yeah, the church's canon law does have provisions against that kind of thing. And so just because we're right against the break, when we return, Maria, I'll share with you what the canon law says about the age. You have to have a minimum age for a boy and it's a different age for a girl to be validly married. And then there's also the question of you need your parents' permission under a certain age. So I'll tell you what those are when I come back, okay? All right. Thanks, Maria. Stand by. I'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show and your phone calls right after this.
This is going to be such an exciting day. I hope you enjoy it.